Hello, thanks for joining my show. I'm Dr. Kent. This is my weekly show. I'm a Boise area psychiatrist. I have this every Sunday morning at 9 in the morning. I appreciate you joining in. This is my fourth show. And if you're tuning in for the first time, I tend to cover a wide variety of topics in the show related to mental illness, of course. I will spend a little time discussing depression as it is a little bit more common. So you'll hear me talk a lot about depression. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about kind of a combination of bipolar affective disorder and what we call, it's kind of a variant, it's called schizoaffective disorder bipolar type. And I've invited a special guest on today. But before I go there, I have a couple of announcements. First of all, I have some guests coming on the show, which I'm excited about. I have Dr. Mark George. He's a psychiatrist out of South Carolina, and he is considered the father of TMS. He was one of the early researcher in the TMS and helped develop it, and he's considered the world expert. I've met him at several world conferences, so he's coming on the show in July. I'm super excited to have him on. He's very well-spoken, well thought of, and has a lot to say. The other guest I'm bringing on is Liza Long. She's the president of the local NAMI chapter, which stands for the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. She's written a book called I Am Adam Lanza's Mother, and she kind of went viral on the internet. So I'm excited to have her on the show, and she's going to tell her story. So I'm really excited about that. Excuse me. Also visit my website at treasurevalleytms.com to get all the updates and announcements and information, and all my shows are on there. I also have videos and articles and authoritative links on my website. Well, let's jump right in. I've invited Stephen on the show. He looks familiar to me. How do I know you?
Not sure yet. Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Well, actually, Stephen is my son, and so I'm excited to have him on the show. He's going to talk a little bit about the struggles he's had. And first of all, Stephen, I have some questions for you, so let me get those out.
I may have answers. We'll find out.
We'll find out. The things I've always wanted to ask him and never had the courage to ask him.
Should make for good radio, yeah.
Exactly.
We'll find out.
So I'm going to be bold and ask you questions I couldn't ask before.
Sure.
So first of all, Stephen, how old are you?
33 years old.
Okay, glad I know that. I had to ask your mother to find that out usually. So what are you diagnosed with?
It's a schizoaffective disorder bipolar type.
Okay.
And that consists of, I mean, primarily mood swings. Initially, that was what I saw in life, and more actually the depressive side initially. And then into my early 20s, it became more paranoia, hearing voices, thinking I'm seeing things, you know, dark shadows and, you know, tricks of the mind and stuff like that. So it eventually becomes a little, you know, debilitating.
So it sounds like you started noticing symptoms when?
I was about 23.
What was it like before you were 23?
I mean, I was pretty much up most of the time. I could, for some reason, the depression had gone down through college, and I was able to complete college because of that. The first time I went, and then the second time is when it kind of hit me, so it kind of put me down from completing that. So it kind of shifted.
I'm confused. You said you went to college and completed it, but then didn't complete it.
I went to a second college.
Okay.
So in the second college.
The first degree you got okay.
Yes.
The second degree was a struggle because of this.
Yeah, it kind of developed into the early 20s when I had gone into college for the second time.
Okay. So what was it like growing up with this condition as a child?
In school, people didn't understand me pretty much. That I was kind of the outcast and the troublemaker, as, you know, kind of seen that way. Couldn't pay attention in class. Couldn't get work done. Had to kind of do some extra education on the side because I wasn't getting all the learning. I couldn't absorb it all. Just kind of treated differently by teachers and stuff like that.
Can you go into a little more detail about being treated differently? What sort of things were different?
I don't know. Maybe I treated people more differently than they treated me. And maybe that's partly what happened is I talked a lot in class. And I think people were annoyed by that because had a lot of energy and I couldn't focus. So I was blathering about other stuff. So, I mean, maybe partly it's painted because of me, but I had to show them who I was for them to be able to make that conclusion. So actions like that, kind of being disruptive was, you know, not helpful for other students. They didn't like that.
So you take a little bit of responsibility for how maybe they reacted to you.
Yeah, I mean, once you realize what you're dealing with, you kind of have to take responsibility later. I mean, when you're a kid, you don't, because you think everyone around you is how they are because of how they are, not because of what you're doing. So it kind of transforms into responsibility eventually, looking at it.
Can you remember any particular negative experiences in school that jump out at you or you can recall?
Primarily the disruption and getting pulled aside almost weekly and kind of be told to quiet down. And it's being sent to the principal's office pretty often and then getting an earful about that. Those are the main things. And then
how do you think that affected you when you were young?
I'd say it lasted into my adulthood into, how it affected me. How I looked at myself, because, I mean, they kind of, you know, lock you away when you're in school that way. They don't know how to deal with you. So you get kind of this perception that you should be put away.
Did you actually get locked away on any occasion?
Yeah, the principal locked me in my room because they didn't know how to deal with what I was doing.
How long did they leave you in that room locked up?
It was like 2-3 hours, probably.
So you were by yourself locked in a room for 2 or 3 hours?
Yeah, I was about 9 or 10 years old. Yeah. So, you know, you get treated differently.
So how did you feel about that?
It's, you don't understand it when you're going through it. You're just like, why? Why am I different? Why isn't anyone else getting locked away or whatever?
So you didn't feel real good about yourself?
Yeah, but it was more confusing. I mean, eventually it developed into what's wrong with me or whatever, but
okay.
And it kind of grows from there.
Now, how many siblings do you have? I know the answer to this, but
people may not want to guess out there. Know how to guess at this one, but I have 4 siblings.
Do you think it caused any problems with your siblings when you were younger?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I was in the room with my older brother staying in there and you know, same thing, always talking, always disruptive, kind of like telling me to shut up, you know, basically, I need to go to sleep, or you're talking too much, or not understanding my behaviors, so they avoid me or kind of treat me differently, kind of similar to how school ended up happening that same way.
So it translated over to other relationships, even in the family.
Yeah, so it started to paint a broader picture of, okay, there's something around, things going on around me is indicating that maybe I'm part of the problem.
So before we go on to the next segment and kind of take a break, I have we'll come back to this question, I think, when we take a break, because I think it's important to kind of talk about this one, because I think it's important for people to hear. But if you're just tuning in, this is Dr. Kent. This is my weekly radio show every Sunday. I bring on different people. I try to have stories told that I think are important for people to hear. I want people out there who have problems and difficulties to hear these stories, because I think it's important to talk out and speak about these things. So we'll take a break here.
Dr. Kent.
This is my weekly radio show every Sunday morning at 9 in the morning. I always feature different guests and people on my show and bring them on to tell their stories. I think it's interesting for me, and I hope it's interesting for people listening in. Today's segment's kind of special for me. I've got my son Steven in the show. He's my middle son. I have 5 children altogether. I brought Steven on the show because he has had long-term problems with mental illness. He doesn't like to call it an illness, and that's great. It's some kind of struggle that he has, though, and he's diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder, bipolar type. And so I've been asking him questions, and he's had some great answers. I've kind of talked about his early experience as a child struggling with the illness. Even though the illness wasn't full-blown or recognizable as a diagnosis, it still was causing problems even from a young age. So my next question to Stephen is, if you could say something to people in the past who were an authority over you, what advice would you give?
learn about this stuff. I mean, the only way people can learn about it is through this kind of medium, talking about it. Because you can't really tell people to change their mind if they don't know what they're dealing with. So, I mean, I can't fault people for doing that because we all have some areas in life we're unaware of, and this is one of those areas most people don't know about. Some certain authority are, you know, trained on it. Like, I would say, you know, police officers and stuff are talked to about it. Schools, maybe a little here and there, more like an ADHD thing maybe, because that's the most obvious thing that's affected in the classroom. But maybe authority in schools are getting better, but back around when I was there, maybe not so much.
Okay. So getting better educated about it, learning more about it, so they're more understanding.
Yeah, more awareness. Even just awareness alone will maybe spark some, you know, they might see something and say, oh, maybe this is related to that thing I heard about. Maybe we should look into that. Because if it's a problem for them, they're going to want to solve it. And so to solve it, you have to actually get the right answers to pursue that.
Okay. So you can kind of answer this earlier, you know, at what age did you really realize the full extent of your condition and had insight into it? You kind of mentioned your early 20s.
23 would be the exact age.
23.
Yeah.
So just on the side, as a psychiatrist, that's not unusual. A lot of these types of illnesses don't become full blown until late teens or early 20s, and not everybody has insight into it. And I think in your case, I was really relieved when we first talked about it and started talking about your diagnosis and what you might have. You instantly accepted it. You instantly seemed to have insight that this seemed plausible and reasonable for you.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, just before that had happened, I was already on a self-search through books on mental health and psychology, trying to pinpoint it for myself and not having really a name for it, but having symptoms on a list. Could kind of check that off and place it into a category that I could focus on.
So that helped you understand, and it kind of rang true for you.
Yeah, I mean, the seed was planted for the knowledge of accepting this kind of thing, although acceptance takes quite a while once you get into it. But being aware of it and accepting that it is a possibility and embracing it is the first step.
I know you and I have had a lot of long discussions about this condition, and it's not all negative. There are things that maybe are positive for you that helps you with the things that you enjoy in life or the passions you have. And I know music is one of those things. Can you tell me a little more about your passion for music and where that came from and how that works in your life?
Well, initially, music was something in my life in the younger years, here and there, some tooling around on piano and such, and providing some release to an extent, and then went through being in a band and discovering that I wanted to have a purpose in music to talk about the awareness of mental health, because I feel like it's a good emotional tool, and emotional tools is what gets to people in a good way. They're responsive to that. And I think if we start with people who are dealing with this, whether it's friends or family or yourself, music is the way to express it and share it. So people need that.
So what's the name of your current project?
It's Silence and Sound, and it's got kind of a... Initially, it was kind of like putting a bipolar theme onto what music is. You have silence and sound. With mental health, you have, you know, light and darkness, or happy, sad, are kind of the two spectrums. So I felt like they fit together because music has its own dynamics as well as mental health can.
So that kind of is reflected in your music.
Yeah. Everything that I write comes from that part of me just because it's so natural, and I want people to take something out of it.
So how long have you been in this new project since you left the band that you're in?
About 3 years is when I started.
How many songs do you think you've written with this new project?
Mostly complete songs, I would say about 40 up to 50. And then unfinished, you know, I have 30 more or so, but, you know, they don't always get finished, so.
Okay.
You know, they get left on the side sometimes.
So how can people hear your music or find your music?
Probably the best way to get, and you can get some free music to hear it, silenceandsoundexists.com. I'm on Reverb Nation as well. I'd recommend it, especially if you have friends or family or yourself dealing with this, because it's not meant to just sound cool or be the next thing. It's supposed to be therapeutic and help spread awareness.
Okay. So we're going to sample some music today. We're just going to play some snippets of your music, if you're cool with that.
Sure.
So what's the first song we're going to hear today?
Well, it's going to be the first track off my album, which is called Don't Keep It to Yourself. And that kind of speaks to what we're talking about right now, which is it's okay to be your weird. Yeah.
That's cool, Steve. Well, I know since I've listened to your music, you don't hold back on the emotion. So that's what I love about it. So thanks for coming on the show. We'll have you on the next segment again, and we'll listen to this song. Thank you.
Thanks.
Show. I've got my son Steven on the show, so I'm indulging a little bit. He's my middle son, and he's on the show because he does experience problems with his mental health. He's diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder, bipolar type. There are people in this community that also have the same diagnosis. In fact, I treat it all the time in my practice. Steven is, I think, very articulate. I think he can talk very well about his illness. He's free to talk about it. In fact, he has a Facebook page where he talks extensively about what he goes through and his struggles. And you can find that at Silence and Sound on Facebook. And he has got a large following there. He's also a musician, so we'll talk a little bit about that today. But I want to circle back around. Steven started having problems in his early 20s, but really it goes back to childhood. He struggled in school with teachers and other students who didn't understand what he was going through. And he himself didn't understand it either. So he didn't really blame anybody for that. It wasn't until he got a little older that the diagnosis was more clear. So Steven, talked a lot about what you've gone through a little bit. From my perspective, you seem to accept treatment very readily, which was a relief for me. That's not always the case in these conditions. So what treatments for you have been effective?
Well, to kind of segue into going into taking it and into medications, I was actually in the middle of a manic episode when I was aware that this was a diagnosis. You had recommended that this could be something along those lines, and I was willing to try the medications, and what kept me with it was it immediately brought me back down in the middle from this high place of paranoia, and I was hearing things, and it's probably the height of the worst of it, and I've ever since haven't gone to those heights again because of the medication.
So the medication has been really effective for you.
Yeah, I mean, luckily I took to it. I had some initial medications I took that were like a lithium, because initially the diagnosis was thought to be just like a bipolar type 2. And then as there was more symptoms that came out, the psychiatrist I went through had started to notice that there was more to it. So I tried new medications along with that, and a combination, and those seemed to work. So that, you know, it takes a little while for it to fully balance you out. But for people out there, if you're having a hard time with the beginning phases of medication, you just have to keep with it, try different things, and it could work. You know, it most likely will work for you, but just try different things too.
As I've referenced in prior shows, I kind of call treatment custom work. Every patient that comes in front of me is a different challenge, and it might be a different medication or combination of medications, or it's deep TMS or whatever. In your case, I sense that there was some changes in medicines and some adjustments and trying to find what works and doesn't work and kind of settling in. Is that kind of the case for you?
Yeah. I mean, it settled in pretty quickly. I think the medications I'm on now was the second one I tried, because the initial one, like I said, was lithium, and that's kind of a fast acting, get you to where you need to be kind of thing. But I did go into the hospital, initially, until I got, you know, the direct medication that would quickly get me to where I needed to be to get out. And then, the second medication I tried, which was, Lamictal, was what I'm on now, and so that's been with me and been the main active medication that's really balanced me.
Good. So you're married and you have a son.
Yep, just popped out. That might be too visual, I don't know. You get the idea.
They tend to do that.
Yeah.
So how's that going?
Oh, that's awesome. Before I had kind of relaxed on my meds just beforehand, before he came along, mainly just because it lends a little more creativity to when I write. But as he came along, I knew I'd get more stressed and I need to be more balanced. So I would recommend, if you have more stressors in your life, that you stick to staying on them, because once they come along, you know, it takes a little while for it to kick back in and get stabilized. So, I was able to be there for him on that level and not be, too stressed about it, but it's wonderful, so that's awesome.
You feel like it's been a change for you then that's been positive?
Yeah, I mean, initially, I mean, you know, part of what I deal with is when stressors come along, it's different for me, so it can debilitate me in so many ways, and similar to, I think it was Mackenzie, you know, she came on earlier, talked about depression.
She's actually coming on after you.
Oh, that's right. It was in different order here, folks.
That's okay.
I had a different experience.
She's coming on, though.
Yeah, I know. That's right. So, let's see. Where was I? So, yeah. So, the initial stressors of having a child was a little tricky for me. But as he got older, you know, he's 7 months now. Into that 3 to 5 month mark, it got easier for me. But it was pretty hard for me the first little while with the sleep schedule and diapers and stuff, which, I mean, that's just about anybody, you know, with the stressors, of course.
Sure.
Just hit me harder.
Well, I'm proud of you. You've done a great job, you know,
managing
your affairs and trying to make it work for you with a very difficult disorder. This is not an easy disorder. Most people are almost always disabled with this disorder, and I think you've made a gallant effort to really make your life work. And I know obviously you've got a family around you that's made that possible and helped you with it. I'm going to segue back into your music, because we're going to hear another song here. What's the next song that you're going to play for us today?
It's called Leave the Light On. And I wrote this one because what sparked it was people around me didn't quite, they either don't understand it or they haven't experienced it, so they may know the surface level, what you're dealing with. But you know, when you get too lost in it, things get too dark, you want the people around you to leave the light on.
Well, this is a great song. I've heard it many times, and it's got an emotional impact on me, too. So your music is awesome, Steve, and I appreciate the hard work you put into it.
Sure.
It's a passion, I know, but you also want to reach out to people that are going through what you're going through.
Yeah, it kind of loses part of its meaning. It's therapy for me, but the meaning comes from extending it to other people.
Cool. Well, that's it for today. The last thing we're going to end with is, at least on this segment, is Stephen's song. What is it called again?
Leave the Light On.
Leave the Light On. So appreciate you coming in today. Then the last segment, McKenzie comes on, and that's our last guest of the day. Thank you for listening in.
Just leave the light on so I can find my way home. Just leave the light on and I will find my way. But I'm done explaining it all.
Appreciate my son Stephen coming on today and talking with us today, and I appreciate that very much. On this last segment, I've invited McKenzie on my show, and McKenzie is someone that I've actually treated as a patient. She's received a near full course of deep TMS, so I wanted her to come on the show and talk about her experience a little bit. If you're just tuning in, I'm Dr. David Kent. I'm a psychiatrist in Boise. I've been in the area for the past 27 years. This is my new show. It airs every Sunday at 9 in the morning. I hope you can tune in. I'm always bringing in new people, new speakers, and different people to be on the show. But I want to start off by welcoming McKenzie today, and she looks like she's not too nervous, so that's awesome.
Thank you, Dr. Kent.
You're welcome. So I'm going to ask you some questions, and we'll just kind of have a conversation. First of all, are you a long-term Boise resident? You've been here a while?
I moved here back in probably about 13 years ago. Originally, my family and I lived in Portland, Oregon, and then my parents were also missionaries in Kenya. So I've done a lot of traveling for the first few years of my life, but I've been in Boise for about 12 years now.
Okay. And how old are you, McKenzie?
I am 22, going to be 23 in August.
Okay. Are you... Well, let me talk a little bit about depression, because that's what you came to me with.
Yes.
And just kind of tell me your experience with depression and what it was like for you.
So I actually was diagnosed with major depression in the sixth grade. I had started medication at that point and went through several different medications by the time that I was a freshman in high school, or actually a sophomore in high school, and each time that I was put on a new medication, I would start out at the lowest dose and just the dose would have to be increased and increased until I had reached the max dose, and then I'd have to go to a new medication. So by the time I reached my sophomore year of high school, they had run out of medications that they could prescribe for me, being under 18. And so I spent the next 2.5 years or so without any medication and having to just cope with depression on my by myself. And then recently, probably within the last 4 years, I started going to a counselor again, as well as getting treated with new medications. Now that I was over 18, I was able to be prescribed different medications. All those had the same effect, where I'd start out the lowest dose, and then the dose would just be increased until it was no longer effective. And so at that point, we were I was kind of out of options. I was also starting to get really depressed and having a lot of suicidal thoughts. I never had any attempts, which I'm very proud of, but it was getting to the point where at least once a week I was thinking about taking a bottle of pills and hoping to never wake up, or cutting my wrists and hoping to bleed out. So when I got to TMS and when I started the treatment.
We'll get to the TMS okay. in a second, okay? But what I wanted to get at too, and you're starting to allude to that, is kind of what you went through with your depression. How was it for you? I mean, you talked about, you know, getting probably seems like hopeless because you started having suicidal thoughts on a consistent basis. But what else did you experience with the depression? What else did you feel with it?
I was always fatigued. I had a very hard time staying awake during the day, also finding motivation to even get out of bed some days. I think those were the two big things, were being hopeless and fatigued. Just didn't want to do anything with my day or my life, let alone that.
Okay. So in what ways did the depression affect your life, or what were some of the things that it caused in your life that was not necessarily real positive?
Depression has caused me to be very, I guess, antisocial. I didn't like to spend a lot of time with people. And I just felt very drained from having to put on what I called a brave face, or having to act like I was fine, to the point where it would cause me exhaustion, and I would end up having to go sleep for several hours just to be able to somewhat function again. It was a lot of, I missed out on a lot of fun opportunities, I think, because I wasn't able to necessarily find the joy in it.
Okay. Did it negatively affect your relationships?
Yes, it's definitely negatively affected relationships, both with my parents and my friends and my sister. My dad also has depression, and so him and I sometimes have a very different opinion on how we need to take care of ourselves with it. And so when I would be struggling with depression, my dad would want me to do certain things that he thought was helpful for him, when in reality it was not helpful for me. So that was one relationship that was strained.
Can you give me an example of what might have been said, or what expectation that might have been?
He wanted me to go out and exercise, which I knew personally that it should help. But for me, the act of even putting on exercise clothes was draining, and I couldn't bring myself to even walk out the front door.
Did you ever get to the point where you actually did some exercise with this, or along the way?
Within the past year, I started exercising more on a more regular basis, and it definitely started helping, but it wasn't really until I was getting back into counseling and had a medication added to that I was able to actually make myself go out and exercise.
It sounds like it was a real struggle to do
that. It was.
It wasn't like it was easy or you could just go out and it would...
No, I actually got myself a personal trainer so that for at least once a week for an hour, I would be exercising.
It kind of made you do it, basically. Was that true of a lot of other things, that your motivation level wasn't there and it was hard to do other things?
It was really hard for me to keep up with my schoolwork. I'm in nursing school right now, and so one of the lowest points when I knew that I needed more help was when I didn't pass a required class. And I knew that I could have passed it if I had tried to focus my attention more on studying. And that was actually a big eye-opener for me, realizing that it was a depression that was taking over and that I did need to find more help for it.
Okay. It sounds like you've battled with it for a long time. You know, you said you tried all these different medications. Can you recall about how many medicines you might have tried before?
I want to say that I tried at least, I want to say probably about six before I was 18. And then after I turned 18, I've probably tried, I want to say, another five.
Okay, so over 10 medications you've tried. Sounds like you did quite a bit of psychotherapy as well. Probably got a little benefit, but not what you really needed to get out of the depression.
Yeah, it was, the psychotherapy was great in the time that I had for it, but it wasn't, it was more like a little quick fix rather than something that was lasting.
Okay. So that's fast forward to now, and you've been treated with deep TMS. How did you learn about deep TMS in the first place?
My doctor and counselor discussed it between themselves to see if it was an option for me. And then at my next appointment, my psychiatrist brought it up. And that was the first that I'd ever heard of TMS. And I was at the point where I was ready to try anything to get it to help. And so I said, sign me up.
Okay. So you've received, I don't know if you're quite done yet, right? You have a few more?
I have three more.
Three more.
Yeah.
So you've received about 33 treatments of deep TMS. And how's that been for you?
It's been great. Was a little annoying at first having to come in 5 days a week, but it was definitely, as of right now, it's definitely worth it, because I really do feel like I have the majority of my life back.
So you feel like you're pretty much out of your depression at this point?
At this point, I have moments, but I'm able to pull myself out of it, and that's been a very long time since I was able to do that.
And as you know, we kind of keep track of your depression when we do treatment. We keep depression scores.
Yes.
And your scores, as I recall, have gone almost down to near zero.
Yeah. I took the test again today, and I was at a 4 again. The biggest issue is my sleep, but that's kind of out of my control when I have to work night shift.
Yeah.
So
but for those who are not understanding what that score means, it's a part of a PHQ-9 score for depression, and anything below 10 is kind of in the mild range. I can't remember your original score. Was it above 20?
It was 18.
18. So your score was 18. Now it's a 4, but you've been down to like 1 or 2, haven't you?
No, the lowest I've gone is 4.
4, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And only because your sleep's still not quite there. So otherwise, all the other depressant numbers are down to zero pretty much. So sounds like you've done very well with it. So how has your outlook changed? How does your outlook change now that you aren't necessarily having to think about these negative thoughts and hopelessness?
My outlook has changed drastically. I am thoroughly excited to finish my nursing degree, and I'm excited to go back to school this coming semester and definitely have the motivation to work hard and study hard. And before it was just, I'm just going to get by. And I just love the amount of energy I have right now. I'm able to do things that I love. Been able to read and not get drowsy from it, which has been a long time that hasn't happened. I'm just overall very happy about what's coming up for me.
So your future looks a little different now.
Yeah.
Not quite so gray or gloomy or dark.
Yeah, it's been several weeks since I have thought about hurting myself, and I just feel like this. I have this weight off my shoulders now. It's not even in the back of my mind.
Well, that's exciting. So if you needed it again, would you do it again?
Yes, most definitely.
And as I mentioned to you, and I've mentioned the show before, is that if people respond to deep TMS, all the research points to they'll respond again.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true of medication sometimes, or most of the time with medicines. They don't always work again if they work the first time. So that's something you can always put in your pocket and know that I don't have to get hopeless. I don't have to be hopeless. I have something that's always going to work for me. So, and that's exciting from my perspective because I've been practicing for 27, 30 years or so, and I've not been able to always say that to people. Now I can say that with confidence. So that's the thing that makes me excited. So would you recommend this to a family or a friend?
Yes, I would.
Probably have talked about it to family and friend.
Yeah. My parents are very excited about the change that TMS has helped me achieve. I have friends that are not aware that I have depression that have seen me, and they tell me that I look amazing even though my physical appearance hasn't changed. I think my mental health definitely has, and it's shown on the outside.
Well, you're smiling a lot these days.
I am.
I know when I come see you, you're like, you got this big old smile on your face, and you didn't start out that way.
No, I was, you always seemed to catch me when I was, well, when it was 5 days a week, I was also, for the first 2 weeks, I was also going to school. So I was in the middle of finishing up my semester, and having to get up earlier to come see you before I went to school. So that was part of it. But yeah, I definitely feel like I am smiling more.
Is school coming easier for you now?
Yes.
Now you owe me now for getting you these great grades.
Yes.
At this point,
I certainly do. I owe you a lot.
No, I'm just joking on that one. It's been a pleasure to work with you. It's always wonderful to see people respond so well. That's why I bring him on the show, is to bring people on who succeeded at treatment. That depression doesn't have to be hopeless.
It's true.
It doesn't have to stay this way. So that's what makes me excited, is to see the results, and it makes me want to come back to it time and time again. So, well, I appreciate you being on my show.
Thank you for inviting me.
And for those listeners who are just tuning in, I have this show every Sunday at 9 in the morning. It's the Dr. Kent Show. I'm a psychiatrist in Boise, have been for a long time. I'm going to keep on bringing people onto the show who have stories to tell, bringing experts on. In fact, as I announced earlier in the show, I'm bringing on Mark George. He's considered the father of TMS. He's the world-renowned researcher out of South Carolina. He's coming on my show in July. I'm also just found out that Lisa Long, who's the president of NOMNY, is going to be on my show. She became viral on the Internet because of a book that she wrote. Let me say it's called I Am Adam Lanza's Mother. So she's coming on the show, and I'm excited for that. So she has a story to tell, and she has a lot to say about NAMI, which is the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. So I really appreciate you tuning in, and that's it for this week. Thank you.